If you read Eric Asimov's wine columns in the New York Times, it becomes quite apparent that Eric drinks for pleasure, plain and simple. But it also becomes apparent that he does not think wine should be completely demystified. Eric writes about this duality in his new book, How to Love Wine, a Memoir and Manifesto. Eric, good to have you with us. Welcome.
It's my pleasure, Lynn.
So, Eric, am I right in saying that I think you want us to stop worrying about what's in the glass and just enjoy it, but also leave a little of the mystery intact?
That's exactly my point in this book. There's so much pleasure in wine, and we create so many obstacles to feeling that pleasure. We feel that we have to know so much about it. We have to be able to describe what we taste. We have to know what sort of barrels those wines were aged in, what sort of dirt the grapes were grown in. And that's all fine if you're that curious about it. But that's not a prerequisite for enjoying wine. And I think we've let the wine obsessives in our society define how to appreciate wine. And I'm going to make a point here that there's a big difference between the great mass of wine that's available out there and the small amount of wine that is made with care, with intent, that is somehow an expression of culture. It's a little bit like mass-produced food and good restaurant food. There's a real difference in it, and we shouldn't lump it all together. Most wine critics don't separate the two kinds of wine, and I think that's a major problem. The wine with the funny picture on the label, 15 million bottles a year, is very different from the wine that's produced in a small vineyard by a family that's been doing it for centuries.
Okay, then. Can you give me an example of something that you love?
Yeah. There's so many great stories in California. And, you know, we've had a tendency to focus on the wines that get the highest scores and so on. I'm looking for wines that have a connection to the land, that have a history of expressing the qualities of that particular place where the grapes are grown. You know, I look at a place like Napa Valley, and one of my favorite Cabernet Sauvignons there is Mayacamas Vineyards, and this is a historic place that's been making great wine for decades, but it's been kind of disregarded lately because it stylistically doesn't fit into the popular notion of big, powerful, fruity Napa wines. Mm-hmm. And yet they've been making such wonderful wine in a consistent way that really expresses the philosophy of the Travers family that's been making the wine, the dirt in the west side of Napa Valley where the grapes are grown. And I feel it's a shame that it's been kind of disparaged because it doesn't fit stylistically in with what's popular today.
So which Cabernet is it, and what does it taste like?
Well, it's a Cabernet Sauvignon, and to me, it's a wine that needs time to develop. And it used to be that we expected most great wines to require aging. And in recent years, this has changed. We've made wines that are more accessible immediately, maybe at the cost of the ability to keep for a long time. And you know, when you ask what it tastes like, it's a hard question to answer because I resist the use of the sort of listing of fruits and flavors and flowers to describe wine. But I would say that this wine has a texture that captivates. It feels so good, and it's fresh and refreshing that you want to keep drinking it. And it does connote flowers and fruits, yes, but it doesn't really matter which ones. It's just delicious. And Lynn, when you talk about demystifying wine, do we really want to break that wine down into a dozen flavor components? You know, in a way, that's saying that the human has control over the wine, where the great thing about wine is its unpredictability and its changeability from year to year, from hour to hour in a glass, as it ages. That's the mystery of wine that I think needs to be preserved.
How about another example?
Well, I think a little family operation, Mathiasen Family Vineyards, this is also in Napa Valley. It's a fascinating experience to visit the Mathiasens, and it harkens back to the days when wine was really just a subsistence crop, like anything else, a farm raised. They raised their grain, their vegetables, their animals, and their grapes. And I feel as if that's the connection that we're missing today. The bottle of wine that belongs on the table with the bread and the meat and the vegetables represents wine's true place as a staple. And it can be so much more than that. But if you approach it from that direction, I think that you will develop much more of a sense of ease with it.
Mm-hmm. Eric, thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
Eric Asimov is wine critic for the New York Times, and his latest book is How to Love Wine. Now, for information on the wines Eric talked about and a recipe to go with a big red, it's called My Favorite Beef Daube, and it's from Dory Greenspan. Well, all of that is up on the website, splendidtable.org.